Learned through the pandemic, we can never be caught unprepared again. And so many Americans, when COVID hit, they had nothing in the house. Stores were shut down and doctor's offices were shut down. And even if doctors prescribed drugs, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, pharmacists wouldn't fill the prescriptions. That was a nightmare.
Now the situation is much worse. We have these horrible supply chain problems. In our emergency medical kit at the wellness company, we have 8 prescription drugs that are all potentially life-saving.
Most people have died with COVID. They died in the hospital because they didn't receive early treatment.
Every American family should have one of these.
I can tell you the wellness company kit is the answer.
Hi, everybody. I'm Christine Dolan, and this is our show, Globalists in Plain Sight. And today we're with somebody who's going to make us smarter because many of us don't know. Brian Hooker is the chief scientist at Children's Health Defense. And Brian and I are going to discuss something that a lot of people don't know about, but they've heard about. It's the BSL 3 and 4 labs. These are the labs where after the coronavirus hunters collect the coronaviruses, they take them to the labs, and then that's where it's Frankenstein science, quite frankly, folks. It's where they humanize the mice or these other animals, and they try to figure out if the coronaviruses are transmissible to human beings, and that's why we have vaccinations. So Brian, first of all, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much, Christine. It's an honor to be with you. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Well, the honors are ours. And Brian, you know, we all hear about the flu is going to, you know, the avian flu's here. We're going to have to, all of a sudden there's a, you know, emergency use act that's been initiated, you know, within the last 10 days here in the United States. So we can talk about this in theory, but it's not. I mean, this is sort of ground zero in these labs. So yes. First of all, we know from other interviews that there are probably at least 35 countries that have these type of labs in the across the world. And we know that we have 15 BLS-4s. This is the highest security here in the United States. So let's just talk about why do we have these labs, Brian? Because they're not regulated. It's as dangerous as, you know, nuclear. It's not coordinated. It's maybe 5,000 people that are involved, you know, with collecting these coronaviruses, and this is like the Batwoman that's over in Wuhan. So why do we do this?
Well, that's a really good question, Christine, because BSL-4 labs, biosafety level 4, you know, that's the highest biosafety level there is. You know, one would be just walking into a room and working with some type of microbe or something of that nature. BSL-4 has supplemental oxygen. Usually they have what's called a negative pressure laboratory. So it sucks things in and prevents things going out. But the problem is they're supposed to be regulated by the National Institutes of Health. But unfortunately, lab leaks occur all the time in these laboratories, you know, and not only do we have lab leaks, but we have behind closed doors, very nefarious activities. I mean, essentially what they're doing, I mean, let's just not mince words, is making bioweapons. And usually it's under the guise of, if we find this virus that, and we make it human transmissible, then we can make a vaccine. So if anybody else does that nefarious deed, then we can vaccinate our population against this nefarious virus. But on the way, they're making a bioweapon.
Right. And we also know in the bioweapon world, they say that there's you know, defense and offense, and they try to philosophically claim that, you know, there's good and there's bad and we're doing good, which is crazy because it's all dangerous. I mean, that's just a fact of life. Back in the era of President Nixon, back in the 1960s and 70s. Nixon decided this is too dangerous to do this. We don't need to do this. And so basically he outlawed it. How did we get to the point where we are today? Because the United States is very much driving this.
It was outlawed in the 60s and 70s. I'm not exactly sure the year that it was outlawed, but you're absolutely correct. It was the Nixon administration that outlawed this. And then it snuck back in, and really, you know, there's no evidence that laboratories, you know, like Fort Detrick had ever really stopped doing this type of research. There was always some type of arm of the federal government working directly with universities or other agencies within the federal government doing this type of gain of function research. And now we have so many labs. Just with the bird flu alone, Christine, I know of 5 different laboratories in the United States, including the US CDC, that are doing gain of function research. And so I don't recollect exactly when the moratorium or it was where it was lifted, but you know, by the time 2011, 2012 were rolling around, then specifically those individuals working on avian flu, primarily a researcher in the University of Wisconsin, Dr. Kawaoka, was in full swing with his research. And then there was somebody internationally who's worked with U.S. scientists. His name is Ron Fauchier. He's in the Netherlands, and he has also done significant amounts of gain of function research on avian flu, specifically H5N1. And not surprisingly, the strain of bird flu that is infecting poultry and now cattle, and, you know, in a select cases, humans in the United States.
Currently. So this is happening currently.
There was a brief moratorium between 2014 and 2017, but really it was one Dr. Anthony Fauci that got around that moratorium and got it lifted in 2017. And to me, there's no evidence that people stopped doing this research. Individuals that have been on the spear tip of this, like Dr. Ralph Barrick, Dr. Peter Daychak for COVID-19, and the individuals that I just mentioned for bird flu, there's no really real evidence that they ever stopped doing the research, even during the moratorium.
So I didn't know anything about this until Corona broke. Right. And the only reason why I knew about it, I mean, I'd never heard anything about this. I mean, I've heard of bioweapons and things like that, but I didn't know anything about this because some of the same people that are involved with this had signed the Nature and the Lancet articles back in February and March of 2020, claiming that, you know, we should stand with the scientists in Wuhan and that they didn't do anything wrong and that the lab leak didn't occur. COVID-19
right.
emanated from the wet markets, but then we didn't shut down all the wet markets across the world, which I thought would have been a very logical thing to do, but there were no world leaders at the time that were calling for that. But then there was a movement to say, oh no, it didn't come from the lab. And then, you know, figured out that, okay, they didn't want to say that at the time in 2020, right. because then it would raise the question, why are we funding this, you know, Frankenstein science? What's the reason for doing this, Brian? What do you think? Seriously, I mean, it's so dangerous. It's not regulated. It's so competitive. We've seen what happened during COVID-19. Why in the world would people be involved with this kind of business?
Really, I believe that, you know, we're in some type of biological weapons arms race. I don't know, you know, who is winning, who is losing. It's very, very difficult to tell because there are so many incestuous ties between the United States and China. You know, several laboratories in the United States were funding Wuhan, including Dr. Ralph Baric, Dr. Peter Hotez down at Baylor University. They were actually involved in research with the Bat Lady, Zhang Li Shi. And, you know, so it's difficult. There seems to be this sort of stockpile of biological armaments, you know, whether it be a coronavirus, whether it be Ebola, whether it be bird flu. You've got individuals working on bacterial pathogens like tularemia, francisella. And there are so many laboratories doing this. It's not for vaccine development. That is the ruse. That is what we're being told, is that we have to have the biological weapon so we can develop a vaccine for it. But it seems that there is, you know, some type of coordinated response to make more and more biological weapons, and at the spear tip of this as well as the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
So I want to talk about Peter Hotez. I want to make him famous, yeah, or infamous, I should say. This is a guy who, and folks, you've all seen him on TV. He's out there.
Right, right.
He's a guy who's talks about the fact that everybody should have their shots. He's recently come out and said that, you know, he wants the U.S. government, Homeland Security, and every other law enforcement agency in the country to basically arrest people if they choose not to get the vaccination or any vaccination. And we need to, and so he's down at Baylor. He was right. Also one of the people that was on the phone and in communication with Dr. Fauci and Dr. Collins when they were trying to dissuade people that this, you know, this did not come from the lab back in Wuhan lab back in 2020.
Absolutely. So absolutely. It was email traffic. Yes.
Yeah. So everybody needs to understand this man lies. I mean, he's out there. He lies all the time. And so we shouldn't listen to him. But there's, how does Baylor benefit? Is that one of the institutions?
Correct.
That is involved with the...
Yes. Baylor College of Medicine. And there were four licensing agreements for vaccine development, primarily in the underserved world, over COVID-19. And those license agreements were very, very lucrative and ended up supplying nations like India and South Africa vaccines. And so for that, Hotez had a patent application on a coronavirus vaccine spike protein. He had a sequence for a spike protein. I have not looked at that sequence and matched it up with Wuhan. That's something that needs to be done. Because he was in collaboration while this was being developed, he was in collaboration with the Bat Lady, Zhang Li Shi. And so he was cashing in on the pandemic. Baylor College of Medicine licensed that technology to four private companies.
Which ones?
You would have to ask me that. They're overseas entities. There's, you know, they're not like the Pfizers of the world. But they were supplying, you know, a majority of the vaccines, I believe, in India and then also in South Africa. He's also had very lucrative agreements regarding his prior work in protozoan pathogens. I'm sorry, Helminth pathogens, hookworm vaccines in South America. So he's really, really cashed in on the pandemic, and he's cashed in on tropical diseases prior to that. And he has six patents on tropical diseases, primarily hookworm. And then he has about seven patent applications, many of them which dealt with COVID-19.
All right. So we need to, every time somebody comes out and says that people need to be forced to take vaccinations, we should be asking the question, what is their vested interest? How much Correct. Financially are they benefiting from this? And why are they doing this? Because we know that under the Biden administration, from the Office of Science and Technology in September of 2021, there exists, because I've seen them, I have them. These are the documents from that office, from the Biden White House, that says that their policy is to have a mandated seasonal coronavirus for every coronavirus that these hunters collect, take to a lab, and figure out that they are transmissible to human Right. beings. So this is a business. People are benefiting from it. It's dangerous. Let's talk about the leaks, because you have focused specifically on Wisconsin just recently. And it had been reported that this Japanese scientist out there, whose name I can't pronounce, spell, and remember, but he has, in fact, there were two or three leaks there, but you've, and Senator Ron Johnson knows about that, but Correct. Your team has discovered that there's additional leaks there. When did they happen, and what did people do about it, and did the public even know about it? And where is this lab? Is it in Milwaukee, Madison? Where is it in Wisconsin?
The lab is at the University of Wisconsin, which is in Madison, Wisconsin. Okay. The researcher is Yoshihira Kawaoka. We just call him Yoshi because
it's easy to remember
Yoshi. But Yoshi's lab has had five lab leaks since 2011. And in one of the lab leaks, it involved a needle stick of a graduate student. The graduate student was infected with what's called highly pathogenic avian influenza, HPAI. When you see that, that's an acronym that we could see in this next pandemic is HPAI. It's highly pathogenic avian influenza. And that particular graduate student was supposed to go into a quarantine location. They sent him home to his family. So they ended up sending him home to his family. They said, look, oh, we'll put his family in a hotel. His house is not a quarantine location. It was not under quarantine. And so he was, he had the ability to actively spread what he was exposed to in the laboratory. The National Institutes of Health got involved, said that's not acceptable. And then they were going to put him in University of Wisconsin Madison's hospital. The hospital wouldn't accept him. They would not take him into the hospital. And as far as I know, there was a resolution. He was finally put in a quarantine location, but it took a matter of weeks where he was exposing the populace, exposing the public to this highly pathogenic avian influenza. That's just one example. They've had examples where they have individuals. This is not a biosafety level 4 laboratory. This is a lower level of safety to me, which I take pause in because there's more propensity for lab leaks than a BSL-3. But there was an individual working with supplemental oxygen. Their air hose had a leak. That leak then exposed that individual to H5N1 influenza. And those were the two that were reported to the National Institutes of Health. The other three appear to that they've been swept under the rug. And, you know, I've been working with Senator Johnson's office and with several Senator Johnson staffers, and I'm not sure that they were aware of the other three leaks. And so each time it has been either an air hose, it's been a needle stick, it's been an improper training of a graduate student. This is, you know, this is a research mill. So graduate students come in, they graduate within 4 to 6 years, they're poorly trained. And so, you know, this type of lab leak happens all the time.
So when you say that this is at the university, in some of the research in preparation for this interview, I was looking at the number of universities that are associated with this bioweapon research. And it seems to be, it's not just the Baylors, but it seems to be, right. There's a lot of state universities that are involved. And we have 15 BLS-4s, which is the right. highest security that you're supposed to have. And I'm unsure, actually, how many BSL-3s. When I spoke to Dr. Francis Boyle, he said to me that we probably had 60 plus, and then I looked at another document that said that we may have 1,300, and so and some of those are in two different categories, so I'm not quite certain how many we have, but you know, this obviously gets money. I mean, if, yes. If you're going to set up a lab, how much does it cost to have a lab at a university annually to run? I mean, fluctuates, but ballpark.
It really depends on the extent of the laboratory research that they're doing. It could be anywhere from $1 million a year to over, $10, $15 million. You know, this is big money. Peter Hotez from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation alone has received $30 million for his research. And Dr. Kawaoka Yoshi receives tens of millions of dollars every year for his research from the Japanese government, now from the U.S. government, and from foreign entities, private entities as well, like vaccine manufacturers. He actually has his own vaccine company called Flugen. And so, this is
Is it a public or private company, Flugen?
Flugen is private. It's not publicly traded.
And what is the mission of Flugen?
It's basically to develop influenza vaccines. And Dr. Kawaoka has quite an extensive patent portfolio. I think that between applications and full patents, he's got about over 50 patents, and at least 30 of them are on bird flu.
Okay, so we need to put these people out of business. I mean, we need to put these people out of business. We need to not have this type of this is too dangerous, and it's very logical. They right. are actually engaged in a business that can be very harmful to the public, and then they're also they want to create this danger for the business. I mean, for the world, because then it creates their own it fuels. Their right. own business model to create a countermeasure for that which they are creating that is dangerous. I mean, it's pure insanity.
Exactly. They create the disease. They create the cure. And let's be clear. They are not just taking viruses in the wild and then remanufacturing them. They're taking viruses that don't infect humans, and then they're manipulating in the laboratory so they do infect humans. So they are doing genetic modification. They were doing quote unquote gain of function, where they passage through animals like ferrets that have a very, very similar immune system to humans in order to get these to become human pathogens. It's not like the bat lady is just pulling things out of the bat cave. It is individuals that are manipulating these viruses very nefariously so they can be pathogenic and infective both at the same time.
What would make people do this, Brian? This is so crazy.
So many different reasons. You know, the CDC is doing this research, but under a researcher by the name of Dr. Jessica Belser, B-E-L-S-E-R. And I read on her LinkedIn page that she was fascinated with viruses that could kill humans.
All right. So we have some people that are off the rockers that are involved.
There's a real problem here. There's a real problem. And that's in the US CDC. Christine, that's our tax dollars that are paying for pathogens to be manufactured to make us sick, so then they can come up with the antidotes.
So we're paying for crazy people yes. to create something that's really dangerous, and then to benefit them financially by creating something for a countermeasure.
Exactly. And these university researchers, when they get license agreements, they get millions and millions of dollars personally. Government researchers can get up to $150,000 a year of royalties, which a lot of times that could match their salary every year. Then they get double salary because they're doing manufacturing these pathogens, and they have license agreements with private entities.
All right, we're going to stop and take a break right here, Brian. And coming out of the other side, I want to get into the money side of this, because and talk about what people can do on the state level and what people can do on the federal level.
Special report. Knowing how to invest your money is harder than ever before. Dealing with stock market volatility, record debt, and terrorist attacks requires new thinking. At U.S. Asset Management, We can help you see the world more clearly so that you can move beyond the chaos and invest with confidence. Call us, visit us online, or drop by our office. U.S. Asset Management, helping you make better decisions with your money.
If you haven't noticed, gold has reached a new high, all-time highs, actually, and keeps going up every day. Why is that? It's because precious metals are a long-time historical store of value. And if you own a portfolio and you have assets in the fiat currencies, i.e. stocks, bonds, cash, or whatever, you're vulnerable to hyperinflation, which is coming as our debt explodes another trillion every 90 days. It's really scary. So how do you protect yourself? Go to Advisor Metals. If you look on any of our CDM.press sites, about halfway down, there's an ad for Advisor Metals. Click on it, fill out the form for your contact info, and Igor Bashatsky will contact you and talk to you. It's an easy conversation. There's no sales pitch. He's completely verified by us. He has a regulatory background we've checked into. We've checked with his bankers. We've checked with his IRA custodians for metals. And we can highly recommend Advisor Metals and ERA. So go to Advisor Metals. If you call them directly, tell them we sent you at CDM, and he'll definitely take care of you. But protect your portfolio because you really need to. It's coming. Thank you.
Okay, we're back with our dear friend, Brian Hooker, who is the chief scientist for Children's Health Defense. He works with Bobby Kennedy, Mary Hallin, Laura Bono, and all these great people over there who are ahead of the game, and you guys have been for a long time, Brian. Let's talk about this gain of function, because yes. I mean, even though I have taken a deep dive as a journalist in the last 4 years, I think it's hard for a lot of people to understand, you know, what this is about. But and they're trying to live their lives, and COVID-19 threw a wrench into everybody's life. And I think it's fair to say, and I don't think we'd have to take a poll on this, nobody sane wants to go through what we went through in 2020, 2021, and 2022. But the problem is these people are not going away. So the chances of us going through this again is very high. So we need to get to the root of who these people are, expose them, and get people engaged. They don't have to be scholars in gain of function, COVID-19, you know, this Frankenstein science, but they need to know that it is among us.
Yes.
And they need to do something about this. When we were in the break, I was thinking, how do we educate people in my business? Now, Legacy Media is bought because it's bought by pharma. And I can say that as somebody who grew up in Legacy Media, because I worked for four networks here in the United States. Right. But we need to get people on the local level. The newspapers, I mean, the media in Madison, Wisconsin needs to know about Yossi or whatever this guy's name is. He needs to be famous in his neighborhood, in his city. And they need to know that this is right in their backyard. Because if there's a leak at the University of Wisconsin at Madison, it is among the community.
Yes.
And that it's a risk.
It is. It's a health and safety risk. It's an immediate risk. They've worked on the recipe in order to humanize this bird flu, this H5N1, for really over 13 years now. I think they probably have it right. I think they probably have something in the wings that could be highly pathogenic to humans if it was released. And that type of lab leak then, you know, whether in, and you look at Wuhan, whether it was accidental or intentional, it did start. Patient zero was at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, and then it did take off after that. So it is, you know, feasible that this could be a worldwide catastrophe in the local neighborhood of Madison, Wisconsin.
All right. So this is a phrase I want everybody to, I want this to resonate with. We need to burn the ships and tank the stocks with these people. This is unacceptable.
No.
You think the governor of Wisconsin even knows about this?
I'm not sure if the governor of Wisconsin knows about Yossi. I know that Senator Johnson is very, very concerned and has worked hard at the state level and at the federal level to propose legislation that bans gain of function research. Now, there was the people in the legislature in Wisconsin know about Yossi, and there was a bill to ban gain of function research at Wisconsin in the University of Wisconsin. You know, just I think it was statewide, but it would have affected Yossi's lab and it would have shut him down. But Yossi sent a lobbyist, a guy by the name of Keith Polson, Keith, K-E-I-T-H, Poulson, P-O-U-L-S-O-N, who was a researcher. He's another PhD researcher in the laboratory, but he's also a lobbyist. And so he lobbied very, very heavily the state legislature, and that bill did not pass. So they were not even able to ban gain-of-function research in their own state.
All right. So first of all, is Yossi an American citizen?
I would imagine so. He's been in the United States for a very long time. I don't know directly if he's a U.S. citizen, but he's been in the U.S. He's been at the University of Wisconsin for over 20 years.
All right. So there's a couple of different ways that people can approach this. One is to Poulson, if he's a lobbyist, we can make him infamous because he's promoting something that is dangerous to society, to the people in Madison. And then also, and this is something I don't quite understand. When you work on something like this, there should be some discussion about liability. And I didn't see that. I saw the cover up. Oh, it didn't come from the origin of COVID-19 didn't come from the lab. We've now established that it did come from the lab. It didn't come from the wet markets. That's a fact. We don't have to go any further. But we don't have, there's no liability. Everybody's immune from any responsibility for this. How can that be that we're living in a time where the people who are funding this, whether it's the Japanese government, the U.S. government, the Norwegian government, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, all these people, the pharmaceutical companies, nobody has any responsibility if there's a leak. And we have this economic meltdown like we did the last time. Why is that? I mean, it's a great business model because you're going to make money even if you screw up. But the problem is the screw up can cost people's lives and businesses.
I think we need to look very, very closely at that. I know that lawyers at Children's Health Defense are looking at that type of liability. And I know that, you know, individuals like Hotez are still scrambling, saying up and down that COVID was not a lab leak, that it was a natural spillover from, you know, a bat through a pangolin or whatever. That went into, and so, you know, they're trying to cover their trails because it does lead to Fauci, it does lead to Collins, and that would be a huge amount of liability for somebody creating a pathogen and then getting the world sick with it. With bird flu, there's evidences that this particular strain of avian influenza leaked from a poultry research laboratory in Athens, Georgia, a USDA laboratory that, again, was doing gain-of-function research on birds, gain-of-function on birds. And oddly, they were doing the research in Athens, Georgia, and then the closest identification of bird flu when it hit the United States was in South Carolina.
Now, all right. So is this the current time? So this is recently.
This is current. This
all
is
right.
Recently.
So let's circle back to that. Yeah. So when we have heard just recently about bird flu breakouts and things like that, tell us the full story from beginning to where we are today with Athens, Georgia, South Carolina. Give us a sequence of that.
Well, bird flu has been circulating in Europe for several years prior to 2021. And the official story was that somehow there was a migratory route that went from the Netherlands to Greenland to Newfoundland. And then bird flu then was identified in Newfoundland. Nobody can find the sequence. The sequence is private. And in Newfoundland in December of 2021. Simultaneously, the origin of the pandemic in poultry was identified the same month, December 2021, in South Carolina. Okay. And so if you look at the natural, you know, what's being proposed as, you know, the natural progression of bird flu, it somehow teleported within days from Newfoundland to South Carolina. The more plausible explanation is that they were doing gain-of-function research with the same strain of H5N1 in what's called SEPRL, the Southeast Poultry Research Laboratory, in a part of the USDA in Athens, Georgia. And it was well known that, you know, it could transfer to wild birds, you know, like mallard ducks. And that same month that they were doing research, you know, they started research in April of 2021. They went to December of 2021. And oddly, from Athens, Georgia to South Carolina, they did their first identification. So you tell me, did it come from Athens, Georgia to South Carolina, or did it teleport from Newfoundland to South Carolina within a matter of days?
So how many... of these labs do you think there are in the world? I mean, I've been told, you know, it's in at least 35 countries.
Yes.
We also know, and this is fact, that in Ukraine that there were several labs. We even know that through Rosemount, which is one of Hunter Biden's companies,
right,
that he had invested in Metabia in Ukraine with Nathan Wolf. And Nathan Wolf is connected to Peter Daszak and that whole gang, and which is connected to the Predict project that was running from 2007 to 2020. I think it's 2020 here in the United States at USAID. Right. That has been shut down, but I'm told that there's another Predict 2 that is in operation at USAID today.
Yes.
Why do we have, I mean, why is the U.S. driving this? To me, you know, there's a moral question here, but why, this is more than bioweapons. This is more than just money. Why, this is so dark and so evil. Why are we doing this?
Well, I want to go back to money, and then I want to go to your question, because remember, the FDA is a captured agency. 45%, more than 45% of all revenues to the FDA come from Big Pharma. And so we know that. So when you think FDA, think Pfizer, think Moderna, think them trying to recreate the profits that they gained and the sales that they gained, over $100 billion of sales in vaccines over the COVID pandemic. Think about what they're trying to recreate now so they can make sure that their shareholders and, you know, the government cabal are happy. At the same time, I can't connect the dots directly, but I know that there is a concerted effort with the World Economic Forum for depopulation of the world. I mean, they don't want us here. You know, the goal in some circles, I know that the goal of the world population really varies depending on who you talk to. But the goal that I saw was 900 million people. So that means that like, one in eight people live and seven out of eight people die. Okay, so, you know, how are we going to get there? We call the population through these pandemics.
And that is, you know, when we talk about the depopulation, some people think that we're all out of our minds. But I actually heard that when I got to know these coronavirus hunters back in 2020. And they were talking about the concept of the one health. And I didn't understand what One Health was any more than I didn't understand what the coronavirus research was all about at that point in time. And I'm not saying I'm a scholar, but I've gone deep into the dive on this because I want to understand this.
Right.
One Health is a concept that they're now pushing, and it's connected to the World Health Organization. And that is the plants, the animals, and the humans. And they're basically saying, well, it's all interconnected. Well, yes, if you go to bat caves and you try to find something, I mean, nobody takes a safari in a bat cave. And they're saying that because of the high population, we are encroaching upon nature. And hence, we have to find out what can hurt us. And then they go and they do their Frankenstein scientific.
Right.
But they actually mentioned the words to me, overpopulation, back in 2020. And I thought, okay, these people are off their rockers. But the problem is they're not off their rockers. They're involved, they're employed, and they're committed. And they truly believe that the world is overpopulated. They truly believe that we are encroaching upon nature. They truly believe in this serfdom. It's a eugenics mentality.
Correct.
It's the only way that I can possibly say this. And so if you go back in history, we know that when Nixon, again, I have to go back to Nixon. But right. Nixon's Secretary of State was Henry Kissinger. He did a study on population at that point in time. There was a movement back in the 60s and 70s, because one of my brothers was married into a family that was involved with this, where people really thought that there was going to be a worldwide famine back in the 60s and 70s, because population was increasing faster in the 20th century than it had in the 19th century.
Right.
And there was an urbanization growth at that point in time, and there was a boom in third world countries. So people wrote books. They had a concern about population. President Nixon, during the, I think it was in 1968, I'm not certain if it was in 1972, but 1968, on the campaign trail, when he was asked what he thought the number one issue of the day was, overpopulation. So wow. We haven't talked about overpopulation since I've been covering news for 40 years. But this is something that is out there. You know, it may not be at everybody's cocktail party, but it is at some people's cocktail parties. What do you think this is about? Money? Do you think it's about, because it seems to me that, you know, to be in the room where right. people say, well, we have an overpopulation and we need to cull, because that's a word that people use out in the wild and in conservation.
As if cull we were the population. Poultry. Yes.
I mean, I've never been seated at the table with people who have those serious conversations until recently. And they're pretty astounding, because the one thing that I can feel is that these people really believe.
Yes.
And it's a different way of thinking. It's a different morality stick, because they look at us, they look at their fellow human being as slaves and serfs. It's almost exactly. it's commodifying a human being.
Exactly. And there's so many different elements in the World Economic Forum. They've been pushing this agenda. You will have nothing and be happy. You know, basically, to me, that's the brave new world. And they get to be the alphas. They get to be the ones that are the lords. And then the rest of us are, you know, deltas or epsilons or whatever. We're the serfs. And mm-hmm. we're the individuals that will serve them, whether it's through mind control, transhumanism. There are so many different things that are in those particular plans. And I think that the transhuman agenda is really a part of that, because it is more of a, you know, when I hear these individuals talking about transhumanism, it's more like the hive mind. And I think I'm watching some bad episode of Star Trek, The Next Generation, mm-hmm. of, you know, where all of a sudden then some type of central hub can control all of these serfs into doing what they're supposed to be doing. And then their individuality is absolutely crushed. And this is coming from the World Economic Forum. So yeah, they want less people, they want lords and serfs. It's a chilling, chilling agenda. It is absolutely out there. People just need to, you know, it's a search engine away from seeing all this information. And you're right, it does go beyond money.
So on the local level, let's start on the local level and go to the national, international yes. level. On the local level, what can people do? How do we get this information to them? I mean, should we just push out all of the locations of every single lab that's here in the United States and come up with a plan? Because it seems to me that we need to educate the local journalists and let them know this is in your backyard. So if, you know, Main Street one day, the university down that road, you know, right. something happens, it's going to shut down your newsroom.
We need a concerted effort to know what's going on in every BSL-3 and BSL-4 laboratory in the United States. Public universities, I've FOIA'd the University of Wisconsin to get Yoshi's correspondences with different individuals, to get Yoshi's sequence information for what, you know, these super strains of avian influenza that he's creating, to get all of this information. And I think we need a concerted effort to get as much information for every laboratory, every BSL-3 and BSL-4 laboratory, expose it to the public, expose it through local media, and do whatever it takes to shut these labs down, because that's the hub of it. That is biological warfare is sort of the weapon of choice of, this sort of global cabal. And we need to cut that research off at its head.
Now, we know that there's a Rocky Mountain Laboratory that's in Montana.
Yeah, Colorado State.
We know that there is a, because I wrote about this, and there's Colorado, there's Montana.
Montana.
I know that there's one in Boston.
I'm not aware of that one. Mm-hmm. You probably know that one, but I know of one also in Galveston, Texas.
Right. So when we talk about labs, and this is one thing that I think that we need to do in terms of strategy, this go around, to expose this. I think people need to be named. I think they need to be shamed. I think we don't just say, let's burn the ship and tank the stocks. We need to put names on these people so that, I mean, does Yossi, for instance, does he run that lab, or is that lab overseen by somebody else?
The Yoshi oversees the research, and the laboratory director is the gentleman I named before, Keith Paulson. And right. He's also a PhD. And he's the lab director.
So he's the lab director, and he's also the lobbyist.
Correct. He's lobbying. He's going to Madison. Hey, you know, Capitol right down the street. And he's lobbying the state legislatures.
So who does he report to?
I would say that he would report to the provost of the university. That's the chief academic officer of the university. And these things they're very, very lucrative. There's a reason why University of Wisconsin would take this risk and not shut it down, because Yoshi is earning millions and millions of dollars of university overhead for that university every year.
So then we have to go to the board of directors of the university.
Board of trustees, exactly.
And they probably have, I mean, I know my alma mater at Georgetown, we have, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 different boards.
Right.
So, but they need to go to the board of regents that oversees all the other boards.
Right.
And they need, people need to be asked the question, why do you do this? Now they may say, because it brings money into the university, that's fine. But if you're doing research that has the potential to kill people, you need to have some type of an ethics discussion.
Yes.
And if you're going to have this type of research in the neighborhood, then it should be known to the people who live outside the walls of the university, who live in the same neighborhood.
There is a right to know. There's got to be public disclosure information. You are living in the vicinity of a biosafety level 3 laboratory that has had 5 leaks that we know of. And so therefore it is a danger to your health. People need to know where these labs are. Everyone.
So we need to create a map.
We need to create a map. Absolutely. I feel remiss that we haven't.
So well, we're going to do this. We're going to collaborate with you, Brian, on this. I think this is really important for people to understand. How many of those labs resulted in anybody dying or anybody being, you know, really, really sick? They were quarantined, but what about what happened?
Well, they're the best resource for this, if I can plug a book, if that's okay.
Sure, absolutely.
The Wuhan cover-up by our good friend Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Mm-hmm. It talks about the lab leaks that resulted in SARS. SARS-CoV-1 was probably
a lab
leak.
2003.
Exactly.
And we didn't know at that time that it was a lab leak when it was happening.
Right. No, they did not know. It is a lab leak, though. And so we talked to... You know, I was fortunate to be one of the proofreaders on the book. We talked to Francis Boyle at University of Chicago, a leading expert on bioweapons. Talked to Dr. Merrill Nass, a physician in Maine, another leading expert on bioweapons. And there's a compilation of these lab leaks. And there were You know, some of these viruses, fortunately, they mutate very, very quickly, especially RNA viruses. And after they mutate through humans, then they become less pathogenic and fall to the ground. Others, not so much. I mean, lab leaks of Ebola, I think we really, really need to take pause on that. And I don't know the actual numbers of individuals that have died because of lab leaks, but I would say it's probably hundreds to thousands.
So,
and then we look at COVID on top of that. You know, what's the carnage that was caused by that virus? You know, what is the carnage caused by that virus? And then what is the carnage that was caused by the countermeasure, the vaccine?
Or what are the lack of early treatment or the use of something like remdesivir that
right.
is known to shut down your kidneys, you know, within 3 days?
Exactly. So you can't, you know, we've just come out of this. This was a lab leak, folks. It was a lab leak. It's not naturally made. Evolution, viral evolution does not work that way. And so, you know, despite what is in the you know, now debunked proximal origins paper that was supposed to show, you know, that was trumped up by Fauci, and it was supposed to show that this was natural occurrence. It wasn't.
I want to get, Fauci is now employed at Georgetown University, which is my right. Alma mater. I want to get him fired.
Good.
He should not be employed at Georgetown. I know his wife, Christine, who was ahead of me at Georgetown, she graduated from the nursing school and she's been a fellow over there for a long period of time, as well as right. working at the same NIAID for ethics, which I think is ironic in and of itself. It's a family business of you know,
exactly.
science. But I think that, you know, we need to call people out. We need to name and shame them. And there's a corollary to this. When we discovered what was happening at the Catholic Church as an institution over 20 years ago, people
right.
would talk about the church, but it really wasn't the church. And it took Bishop Accountability to create a database where they actually have the list of the priests or the nuns or the cardinals or the bishops.
Right.
who actually raped kids. And I think
right.
we need a database, something akin to that, so that people can go to it and say, okay, fine, this is the personality that's behind this. This
right.
is the decision maker. And I think it'd be really good to have, and I don't know what we call it, it might be gain of function accountability, something like that, but we really
right.
need to have a database naming people, shaming them, and let people know. Because if they're involved with something like this, and they want to own it because they want to make money from it, then
right.
we need to put the spotlight on them so that people understand that they are commodifying the neighborhood, they're commodifying the human race, and they're making money, because that's an attitude problem.
It
that's
is
an attitude problem. And you know what? I don't think people want to be known for that.
No. No, they don't want to be known for that. Can I call out one more name that I think is really important?
Absolutely.
Okay, there's an individual who is lighting up Twitter, and his name is Dr. Rick Bright. Dr.
Yes.
Rick Bright was the head of BARDA, the Biomedical Advanced Research Development Authority, that's a part of our own DHHS. BARDA is, when you think BARDA, think bioweapons.
Well, and also, that's the place that people go to get money for research.
Exactly. They're a clearinghouse for research. Well, while Rick was at BARDA, he had several patents on bird flu vaccines. And so now he is in bed with Novavax, the company Novavax, that is a vaccine manufacturer, protein-based vaccine manufacturer. Novavax is in clinical trials right now for, you guessed it, an avian flu vaccine. And so every day, Rick Bright, who will get money for the bird flu pandemic, whatever they're going to do, is purveying fear porn. Just, you know, the guy must tweet every 20 minutes. You know, there's probably more of him.
Is he in competition with Donald Trump?
I think he really is. He's in competition with Donald Trump. You know, he hasn't blocked me yet. You know, I've actually called him out for his research and for his, you know, myriad conflicts of interest. has not been blocked yet, but he just is like the Energizer Bunny regarding, you know, these 14 cases of pink eye where we should vaccinate the entire planet.
Well, is pink eye considered avian flu? That's a new term for me.
Well, pink eye is avian flu in humans can result in pink eye.
Okay.
There are lots of other ways there, you know, 99.9% of the pink eye that is transmitted around usually comes from infants and toddlers and does not come from avian flu. But these poultry workers and these dairy workers, the 14 cases, the 13 this year, most of them result in pink eye.
All right. So let's talk about these people are pushing. So he's out there on Twitter and he's fear porning everybody that we're all going to die from avian
flu. We are all going to die. The heartbreak of avian flu. And I replied to his tweet, oh, the heartbreak of 14 cases of pink eye, you know, and they're purveying this fear porn. It's all interconnected. Rick Bright needs to come forward with his conflicts of interest. He needs to come forward with the fact that he did gain of function research while he was at BARDA.
So where does now he's no longer at CDC. Where is he located?
He is a private consultant right now. And I believe that he has a relationship with the vaccine manufacturer, Novavax. I think he was somehow fired from BARDA in 2021.
And he has worked with Peter Daszak, hasn't he?
I am not sure of that connection. I'm not sure of the connection of Peter Daszak. I would not be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised at all. His origin was with vaccine manufacturers. He worked with Novavax in the 2000s. And then went to BARDA in the 2010s and stayed, then became the director of BARDA in 2016.
Wow. I know of people who try to get money out of BARDA for early treatments back in 2020.
Right.
And to date, they still have not received any money from BARDA. And for early treatments, and they also were dealing with BARDA through the end of 2020 going into 2021, and
right.
BARDA's money was actually some of BARDA's money was for early treatments was
right.
assigned to the public relations rollout at the time, so they were moving a lot of money around. Because
yes.
they really wanted to not have any vax hesitancy and put a jab into everybody's arm on Earth.
That's really
and it wasn't just one jab. It was the first rollout. Then it was going to be the four or five boosters. I think in Australia alone, they had ordered so many shots. I think it was 10 or 11 shots per person. In Australia alone. So there is these guys think like hedge fund guys around
right.
the corner.
Huge money, huge money. And incidentally, I think it shouldn't go unnoticed that Rick Bright, when he was the director of BARDA, blocked the national stockpile from obtaining hydroxychloroquine. He blocked it. And the reason why he blocked it wasn't that he didn't think hydroxychloroquine was ineffective. He blocked it because he knew that that would obviate the emergency use authorization for the vaccine. He was in it for the vaccine. He blocked hydroxychloroquine. He killed people. I'm sorry. You know, when you block early treatment, then you're basically sentencing people to death.
Well, and this is something that people have to understand. The reason why they wanted to block the early treatments, if you
right.
found a cure to COVID, and this goes for whether it's avian flu or whether it's any other type of coronavirus,
right.
if you find an early treatment that cures it, you cannot then have Emergency Use Act. And
correct.
The Emergency Use Act is something that's an overreach. Brian, we're running out of time. We're going to have you back to discuss this, and we're going to collaborate with you guys to create this database because we need to burn the ships. Tank the stock and name the names and move on this and let people know that these people are out there. Because if they're out there telling us that we need to be fearful of this, that, and the other thing, we're going to put the spotlight on them.
Thank you so much, Christine. I really appreciate the opportunity. This is making a difference.
Well, we're going to do this. We're going to do this project because I don't know about anybody else, but I never want to live through what we lived through in 2020, 2021 ever again. And I'll do whatever I possibly can as a journalist to expose these people, because I think that once you expose them, they will think twice. They'll think twice about this.
Absolutely. And they're trying it again. They are absolutely trying it again with bird flu. So we have the opportunity to head this off at the pass.
All right, Brian, thank you so much. Thank you for what you guys do over there, because I think it does make a difference, and you've made us smarter today. Thank you, Brian.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you, Christine.